Greetings, friends, and welcome to session number 9 of the Emotional Eating Breakthrough Program. I'm Mark David, founder of the Institute for the Psychology of Eating. The title of today's session is Skillfully Working with Emotional Eating. By now, you have what I found to be the most important tools and distinctions needed to create a true breakthrough with emotional eating, to transform this challenge like never before, and finally begin to live your best life. That's what this is all about. My hope is that you're already experiencing some daylight with emotional eating. My hope is that you're doing the practices that are designed to help you find greater freedom with food, with your body, with your life. In this week's session, we are going to sharpen the skills you've learned even more. We're going to focus on how to redefine and reimagine what success is when it comes to emotional eating. And we're going to focus on one of the biggest challenges we often face once we start to have success with emotional eating, and that challenge is working with setbacks. So let's dive into what I think is some new, for sure, and fascinating material. One of the highly underrated strategies when it comes to experiencing success in any endeavor in life is to make sure we have a good understanding of what success actually looks like. So let's explore how to best describe success with emotional eating. First, here's what success doesn't look like. Success with emotional eating does not look like perfection, where you never emotionally eat ever again. Success does not mean that you'll never have the desire to emotionally eat ever again. Success doesn't mean that you become some perfect eating machine where you have control over every impulse and every emotion, and you only eat exactly what you think you should eat in the exact amount and at the exact time. Let that go. Success does not mean that you have done the impossible and conquered your hunger and your desires. This is a pretty common phenomenon that I've seen over the years. People, you know, will finally experience breakthroughs with their emotional eating. They have periods of times where they might not be emotional eating at all. And it feels great. It feels like you're on top of the world. But the toxic viral belief called perfectionism takes over. And we believe that success with emotional eating means you never emotionally eat ever again for the rest of all time. So your job is to embrace your beautifully imperfect humanity. Your job is to live your life on planet Earth with all its imperfections. You've likely noticed that the world isn't perfect. Other people aren't perfect. Society has its flaws. There's war. There's violence. There's abuse. There's hurt. There's poverty. Welcome to the world. And fortunately, there's also hope, and there's love, and there's kindness. There's beauty. And there's the possibility for humanity to fulfill its greatest potential, for you to fulfill your greatest potential. So we've arrived on a planet that has a long history of imperfection. And we, its inhabitants, we're doing our best to improve. So stop imposing upon yourself impossible standards that no human in history has ever achieved, and that's perfection. Our belief in perfection leads to inevitable disappointment, which leads to guilt and shame, which leads to self-punishment. And one of the ways we self-punish is through food. We punish ourselves for having an appetite. We punish ourselves for eating, for having body fat, for not being able to control our desires. And all of this, those are uncomfortable emotions. And the experience of punishment is uncomfortable. And that can lead us to further emotional eating to help regulate those uncomfortable emotions that we are self-generating. And all because of the outdated belief in perfection, in the outdated belief that success with emotional eating means I never, ever, ever emotionally eat ever again. So let's get as real as we can when it comes to emotional eating and success. Success with emotional eating means you do it less. You just do it less. And the frequency of your instances of emotional eating decreases more and more and more. So you do it less and less and less. Success means you just continue on that road, that path, which is less and less. But there's another important measure of success that I think we should put at the top of our list. And that means that success means that when you do inevitably emotionally eat, because we're people who are emotional, we're emotional beings and we're eaters, and occasionally we're emotional people who eat. So when you do inevitably emotionally eat, you spend less time. Success means you spend less time in self-attack, self-judgment, and guilt. Success means that you remember to forgive yourself as quickly as possible whenever you emotionally eat. You know, here's the thing. For those of us who live in an all-or-nothing mentality, when we emotionally eat, we allow ourselves to collapse. We abandon self. We give up on ourselves, meaning we eat whatever we want. We throw away any semblance of good habits. And we could become like a little complaining kid who, when it can't have what it wants, in this case, the perfection of zero emotional eating, we could lose our cool. And losing our cool means we punish ourselves by letting go of all our good guidelines and practices. Well, if I can't be perfect, I'm going to be completely a mess. So that's a strategy of the child mind, not the adult mind. So success means that when we inevitably have an emotional eating experience, you stay present to yourself. You stay in your royal archetype, your queenhood, your kinghood, your princess or princehood, meaning you don't check out, you don't abandon ship. You stay awake and in the light. You stay out of darkness. So that's a choice. And it's an ongoing practice. So essentially, I'm asking you to time shift, meaning normally you have a certain amount of time that you'll go into self-punishment, that you'll go into guilt or shame or self-attack after an emotional eating experience. I don't know how long that time is for you. It could be hours. For many people, it's days, weeks. For many people, it's months. You have an emotional eating experience. You punish yourself for X amount of time. So your task is to shorten the amount of time that you live in self-rejection and that you live in self-abandonment. Great, do it. But instead of months, cut it down to weeks. And then at some point, you cut it down to weeks and then to days. And then from days to hours. And then eventually you agree to give yourself no more than 5 to 10 minutes in any kind of self-attack and punishment. You forgive quickly. You time shift. You don't waste your time. You're an emotional being. That's your nature. We love, we laugh, we cry, we mourn, we worry, we fear, we celebrate, we nourish, we give our hearts, we feel joy. We do all of life with some degree of emotion. We do our relationships with all kinds of emotions. We experience our work with different emotions. We eat with emotion. Even for people who don't complain of emotional eating and who it's not a problem for, they have times when they emotionally eat. It's normal. We eat food to feel better. You're hungry, you eat, you feel better. You had a bad day at work, you have a nice meal, you have a nice snack, you feel better. You go to your favorite restaurant, you feel better. You're bored, you open up the refrigerator, you feel better. You have a nice dessert, you feel better. It's okay. That's how we're designed. Food makes us feel better. Food is designed biochemically, physiologically, to make us feel good. My point is everyone eats emotionally, and it does not occur as a problem for everyone. Emotional eating becomes problematic when food becomes our main way to regulate our emotional experience. And food and emotional eating becomes problematic when it seems all of a sudden that, oh my goodness, this emotional eating experience seems to have power over me. It becomes problematic when we consistently fall into guilt and shame and self-abuse about the behavior itself. It becomes problematic when you identify as an emotional eater as if you are the behavior and you belittle yourself for having that behavior. You attack yourself for having that behavior. Otherwise, emotional eating is normal, it's natural, it's a part of life. So success with emotional eating means you're not trying to eliminate it from existence. Success means you eventually get to the place where you can allow it to be a part of your life. You smile at it when it shows up. You smile at yourself when it shows up. And if you're going to emotionally eat, you relax. You slow down if you're going to do it. If you're going to do it, you know you're doing it, you slow down. You get present, aware, conscious, and you enjoy it. you get out of it exactly what you're trying to get out of it. Because when you do that, you're going to have less of a need to eat more, and you're going to have less of a need to continue the emotional eating experience. Success with emotional eating means that food is no longer the enemy. That's what success with emotional eating is. You're not looking at food as your enemy. Success means, stated in the positive, you're making better and better friends with food. It takes time. It takes practice. But that's the natural order of the universe. That's the natural order of life on earth. You're an eater. You're an emotional being. You are imperfect. And it's all forgivable. There's no crime. Success means that your appetite is no longer your enemy. You learn to welcome it, just as you would welcome any biological function, the need to breathe, to pee, to sleep. It's all good. Success with emotional eating means the intensity of your emotional eating will decrease as you do the practices you've been learning in this program. The overall intensity, it just calms down. Each emotional eating experience gradually becomes less and less powerful. That's success. And that's a process. That's a journey. And you're on that journey. Success means that when you're not emotional eating, that the majority of your meals and eating experiences are nourishing to you. So in general with food, you're starting to make peace with food by you creating peace with food. You literally, that's how you have peace with food. You want peace with food? You create it. How do I create it? I put myself in a relaxation response because that's where peace lives. Peace lives in a relaxation response. Peace does not live in a stress response where you're running from the lion. That's not peace. It's not meant to be peaceful. So you're present with your meal. That's peaceful. You're aware. You're receiving pleasure, sensations, nourishment. You're experiencing the wonder of food. That's peace. Success also means that when you do emotionally eat, that you slow down, you stay conscious, you stay awake. Checking out when you emotionally eat only gives the emotional eating more power. Checking out when you emotionally eat does not satisfy your appetite. You'll stay hungry, which means you'll eat more, which means you'll feel even more guilty and more down on yourself. So again, instead of checking out when you emotionally eat, you stay checked in. You be present. You be here. Your eyes are open. You're awake. Ooh, such an important distinction. Let me say this as directly as I can. Staying awake when you emotionally eat, that's your guru. Staying awake when you emotionally eat, that's your teacher. That's your guiding star. Wakefulness, meaning consciousness, meaning staying in the light, meaning not going dark, meaning being present no matter what you're eating or why you're eating it, that's the key to transforming emotional eating. Why? Because you can't control anything when you're asleep. When you're asleep, you got no control. You cannot willfully manage your life if you're snoozing and checked out. And remember, why would we check out when we emotionally eat? We check out because number of reasons. First of all, part of us is seeing emotional eating as a crime. A part of us thinks we're doing something bad, so we do the crime as quickly as possible. That's what it means to be a good criminal. You do the crime, you robbed a bank, as quickly as possible. So we eat fast and unaware, which means we'll need to eat more to feel satisfied than if we were eating slow, present, and relaxed. And in order for us to go against our own wishes and eat something that we say we really shouldn't, this is all around checking out, the adult in us, the royalty in us steps aside. So the parent, the adult, your royal self, your king, queen, prince, princess, you step out when you emotionally eat. And when we step out, a less mature archetype steps in. So, when you learned, as you learn to stay present, when you are going to emotionally eat, you're actually invoking the adult voice in you. You're calling forth your royal archetype to be present. So your job is to stay awake at the wheel at all times when you eat, at all times when you emotionally eat. And staying awake at the wheel, that's a good strategy for eating. It's a good strategy for everything in life. The way we do food is the way we do life. Our relationship with food is oftentimes a reflection of our relationship with life, and vice versa. They're so much the same. Success with emotional eating means you give the rest of your life more energy than you give to emotional eating or weight loss or food worry. Yes, emotional eating, weight loss, etc., those are valid concerns. And those are worthy places to put your energy. That's what we're doing. We're putting our energy into working on it. It's just that weight loss and food worry and perfectionism around your body are no longer your life's sole purpose. They are no longer first and foremost, far above everything else. So success with emotional eating means that your life is now the most important thing in your life. And my friends, when you put first things first in your life, when you put food worry and weight worry in their proper order in your world, emotional eating no longer has the same kind of power. It doesn't hang over your head in the same way. You aren't constantly living in fear about it or reaction to it. Yes, it's still a concern. Yes, we're still working on it. But it doesn't dominate your life force and dominate your life energy. That's success. Furthermore, success with emotional eating means that you finally begin to speak kindly to yourself about your body. You befriend your body. You stop forcing it. You stop shoving it. You stop demeaning it. And please, you stop bullying it into being something else. Bullying it means you're starving it. Bullying it means you're exercising it to death, not because you love exercise, but because you're just trying to make your body be something that it isn't. I'm not saying exercise is bad. I'm not saying following a good kind of diet isn't bad. What I'm saying is you got to look at what's motivating you to do the things you're doing. So you start to get to know your body on its terms rather than your terms. You make your body your ally. Make your body your ally, no matter what it looks like, no matter how much it weighs, no matter how it feels right now. That's success. Success with emotional eating means that you more and more embrace all that it means to be an eater. So if you're going to be an eater, there's going to be ups and downs. And eating is a gift. There's beauty in it. There's pleasure in it. There's uncertainties. What should I eat? There's mystery in it. There's ongoing change. And all this is another way of saying that your relationship with food and body, you agree that it's just a great teacher. It's always teaching us. It's always asking us to learn. It's always calling us somewhere. You know, something I've noticed when it comes to success in any endeavor in life, and certainly when it comes to having more and more success with a healthy relationship with food, with finding peace with food, is that we often need to learn to celebrate the small successes. Stated in another way, success means that you learn how to celebrate success. And again, especially the small ones along your journey. Success means you learn how to celebrate success. This is so important because we seem to live in a world where a lot of it's all or nothing. We want the big success. Nothing else is going to do. We want to win the big lottery. We want the biggest weight loss. We want to hit our exact number. We want the big promotion. We want to eat perfectly. We're shooting for the big win. And what happens is when we're focused on the big win only, we fail to notice the little wins along the way. We don't reward ourselves for how so much of life truly works, which is that we advance by small steps. We advance by baby steps. Right? Yeah, occasionally you take a big leap. Occasionally you do have a big victory. But progression, evolution, success tends to come in a stepwise fashion. Especially when it comes to healing and transforming our relationship with food, especially when it comes to healing and transforming emotional eating, baby steps. When we forget to celebrate those little successes, our journey is far less fulfilling. We're constantly in lack. We're creating a failure mentality. We're doing the opposite of setting ourselves up for lasting success. We're proclaiming to the universe that all we see is failure. Success is a journey. It's cumulative. The more we acknowledge this, the more momentum we build. Success is a feeling. It's not a number on your bank account. It's not a, you can't measure it per se. Because you could have tons of money, you could win the lottery, and you could still be depressed and morose. And are you really successful? Success is a feeling. You feel successful. And the more you feel it, the more you invite it in. So the more you're celebrating your small successes on your emotional eating journey, the tiniest successes, even if you do a practice, you're practicing slow, relaxed, present eating while you're emotionally eating, you're doing that practice, and you failed every time for a whole week. Is that a failure? No. To me, that's a success because you tried. You put in the effort. That's a success. Check that. Put a check mark in the box called success. And next week, you keep going again. You keep trying again until you have that one time where you have a success, a true success, that makes you feel like, oh, that worked. I was able to eat slow when I was emotionally eating and I didn't eat as much and I stayed present and I wasn't in a lot of guilt. I wasn't in a lot of self-rejection. Oh, that's what that kind of success feels like. Here's a helpful journaling exercise. Create a success journal. Every evening, write down in your success journal any way that you were successful that day in your journey with food and body and emotional eating. Find a small success, the tiniest one, I don't care what it is. Even if you emotionally ate that day, did you find some forgiveness for yourself? That'll be a success. Did you stay present with yourself? That would be a success. Did you do something afterwards that was self-nourishing or self-caring? That would be a success. I'm really going to ask you to be vigorous about identifying the smallest of successes that you have and allow yourself to feel that success. Create the feeling of it in your body. Acknowledge it. Absorb that success. Assimilate it. Celebrate it. And as you do that, you invite success in more and more. You notice it. And you actually begin to see your journey more clearly. You see your story more clearly. You see that emotional eating for you continues to be a great teacher. It's asking you to measure success by baby steps. Kathy, age 54, came to see me for emotional eating. It's a very fascinating client for me. Kathy was a teacher for autistic students. She had 6 children of her own. She was a single mom for most of her kids' lives. And she was now living by herself as her children are now independent. And she actually spends a lot of time these days as a grandmother. So Kathy's emotional eating was pretty intense for her. It occurred at least 5 days a week, usually every day per week. And whenever she was stressed or anxious, she would immediately turn to food. There was no lag time. She would especially reach for breads, cookies, various kinds of pastries. Kathy lived in a lot of fear of gaining weight. She had previously had a large weight loss about 6 years before she came to see me. She had lost over 100 pounds. And now her emotional eating was starting to put on some weight. So she was very concerned. Kathy shared with me she'd been emotionally eating as far as she could tell since she was 8 years old. And 8 years old was the age, not coincidentally, that her dad had died and everything changed. So she has essentially used food to self-soothe throughout her entire life. Now, since her big weight loss, she has managed herself as best as she could, but she acknowledges that it's been a struggle. Kathy's especially confused about her emotional eating because she would go through times here and there, a week or so, when her emotional eating would subside dramatically And then it would just return on its own as strong as ever. So as we worked together, I explained to Kathy that emotional eating was not her problem. She kept framing it as the problem, which is understandable. I told her it was your solution. And essentially, why is this your solution? Because you're wasting no time between the moment you feel stress and the moment you reach for food, because food is a quick and faithful stress reliever for you, for all of us. That's the one thing you know to do, to reach for food and to reach for it immediately, because she had so much pain in her early life that she really wanted to have instant gratification. I asked Kathy to do a what else inventory. I discussed with her how the child, the 8-year-old in her, was stepping in when she was emotionally eating, and the adult in her would step out. I talked about how the kid in her wants instant gratification. I want what I want when I want it. And it was fascinating because as we talked about it, it resonated for her so clearly. I suggested to Kathy that by doing the what else inventory and practicing it, by doing her best to try anything other than turning to food to soothe her emotions, that she'd be on the slow road, which is the real road to true success with emotional eating. Because a part of her just wanted to get rid of it immediately. That's what happens when we're in stress, when we're in a stress response. She was in the stress response called, I'm an emotional eater, and I need to get rid of this emotional eating yesterday, even though it's been happening all my life. When we are in an ongoing stress response, time is speeded up. Cortisol, the main stress hormone, speeds up time perception. So when you're in a stress response, you think time is running out, which is perfectly reasonable. That's what a stress response should do, because when you're running from a lion who's trying to eat you, time is running out. You don't have a lot of time. So the stress hormone cortisol is signaling your body to speed up time, speed up your time perception. Time is running out. But remember, the brain doesn't distinguish between a real or an imagined threat. So when I'm in constant stress around, I got to get rid of my emotional eating, I got to get rid of my emotional eating, that's a stressor. And so we think time is running out. And so we want to get rid of it yesterday. And what we have to do is we have to slow down time. And time slows down when we're in a relaxation response. So we work together on her taking baby steps. Just like she does, I told her, this is what you do with your students. That's what you've done with your children. That's what you're now doing with your grandchildren. She was actually very good at working with young people because she did it for a living, and she did it with her own kids, and she's doing it with her grandkids. Kathy acknowledged that she was just extremely patient with her children, her grandkids, her students. And I offered to her that she needed to be as patient with herself. You know, she would initially have success maybe once a week with using something other than food to regulate her emotions. So that was the first, you know, month plus of our work. She had success maybe once a week. And music and deep breathing worked best for her. That was a good substitute for food. And this was frustrating her, but we focused on her being a beginner. You're learning something new. You're starting from square one. Be a teacher to your students. Be a teacher to the student in your mind. Be patient. I was coaching Kathy around seeing that she needed to be a better parent to herself than her parents were. Specifically, when you're about to emotionally eat, that means it's time to slow down, to take a deep breath, to put on some nice music, make contact with yourself, listen to yourself, feel what you're feeling, hug yourself, notice yourself, listen to what your emotions are in the moment and make it all okay. Say something kind to yourself. You know, Kathy had spent so much of her early life not being noticed by her one remaining parent. Her mom worked full time, and her mom was constantly busy just trying to raise the kids and do all the things that she needed to do. Now, Kathy's adulthood, meaning her early 20s and up, was, for her, spent focusing on her kids, focused on her job, her responsibilities, putting food on the table, being a single mom herself. And she never quite had time for her. She was always last on the list. She powered through life. She worked hard to raise her family and be a good teacher. And fascinating, this was arguably one of the first times in her life where she could finally, as a mature person, attend to herself. She finally had the space to be able to listen to herself, to slow down. So emotional eating was being a great teacher for her. It's now asking her to be more intimate with herself, to listen to herself, to soothe herself, not with food, but through self-care, through paying attention to her own inner world. No more powering through. No more letting that young voice of instant gratification run the show. What was really beautiful to watch was Kathy was inspired for the first time in her journey with food. So in her adult life, she's finally inspired about, like, oh, I'm on this journey with food. And now with emotional eating, I have a roadmap. She had a new perspective. She understood what she needed to do. She understood she needed to call in the queen, the adult, the good mother in her, to show up whenever she was about to emotionally eat. She understood that she needed to take baby steps and to celebrate the small successes. And she understood that perfection with eating was no longer the goal. You know, just within a handful of months, she arrived at a place where she was emotionally eating once every few weeks. Huge success. She was satisfied. She was at peace with food for the first time in her adult years. Her weight worry had subsided into the background. Our work was successful. She was successful because essentially she embraced a new way of seeing emotional eating. She embraced a new way of seeing her life. Okay, this is a great time to examine and focus on the phenomenon of setbacks. So setbacks with emotional eating are a great teacher. If emotional eating is a great teacher, then any subset of what emotional eating is doing in our life, that's a great teacher. So if you have a setback, that doesn't mean something's wrong with you. Setback is just being a great teacher for you. The more you effectively work with setbacks and learn from them, the easier it's going to be to find peace and freedom with food and to have the peace and freedom with your body that you're looking for. Here's the thing, you can expect setbacks to happen when it comes to anything in life. So it's reasonable to expect them to happen on your journey with emotional eating. Life is not a straight shot into perfection. Life has its ups and downs. We often find ourselves taking three steps forward and a step or two back. The greatest athletes, business people, entertainers, thought leaders, experts, the most respected people in all of human history all had life stories filled with setbacks. Why should you and I expect anything different? Now, you can and will go through times in life where you don't emotionally eat. Love those times. Feels liberating. Feels healing. It's part of the journey. We can model for ourselves. We can feel, oh, wow, that's what it feels like to go through a nice extended period of time and just, I'm not emotionally eating. It's good. You can experience that sense of being on top of the world. Great. But from there, it would be easy to believe that I've finally overcome emotional eating. It no longer exists in my universe. And for a lot of us, without warning, emotional eating can return. We might be going through an extremely extra stressful time. Maybe there's a certain triggering event. Maybe you visited with your family and you emotionally ate. Maybe COVID times. Maybe a job loss. Maybe a breakup. Maybe financial troubles. So many reasons why all of a sudden, I might emotionally eat again. And it makes perfect sense. Feel bad, eat food, feel better. Here's the bottom line. Many of us can have success with overcoming emotional eating and have a setback, and then we think, I'm back to square one. All the work I've done is out the window. This now means, because I've now emotionally ate after having a period of freedom, it means I'm back to square one. I'm a failure. My willpower is gone. And that means I should punish myself even more. That means I'm doomed to a life of emotional eating, and it's only going to get worse and worse. So it's easy to fall into a dark hole of doom and gloom because of one setback. And this is where you need to stay awake and stay in your royalty, stay in your maturity. It's so easy to abandon ourselves when this happens. We feel justified in our self-punishment and self-attack. We allow all of our good efforts and progress to be insulted and diminished because we had a setback. We beat ourselves up under the guise of wanting perfection somehow. We could become our own worst bully in that moment. Assuming the absolute worst when we have a setback, on one level, it's a form of indulgence. Don't be like that. Stay in your dignity. Stay in your queen, in your king, in your prince or princess. Don't fall into the whining child archetype. Embrace your beautiful imperfection. Of course, sure, you want to dislike your emotional eating behavior? Do it. But don't beat up the person who's doing the behavior. You. Setbacks happen. Life happens. When you have setbacks with emotional eating, you are never, ever, ever back to square one. Let that toxic belief go. All your good work has surely paid off. And you're a beautifully imperfect human being who goes through different phases and seasons in your relationship with food and body. A setback is one moment in time. Even though it feels like you're moving backwards during a setback, the overall arc of your emotional eating journey is moving in the right direction. As long as you continue to do the practices that you've learned to do. Our relationship with food is a great teacher. Emotional eating is a great teacher. Our setbacks with emotional eating is a great teacher. And in large part, it's teaching you to stand by yourself. Don't abandon yourself. Love yourself through your setbacks. If you want, think of setbacks as your personal private test from the wisdom of the universe. Think of them as an essential part of your human journey, of life's classroom. Setbacks are a huge opportunity. It's your opportunity to grow and mature even more. It's your opportunity to bring in more self-love, more self-compassion, more self-care. Setbacks are your opportunity to practice everything you've been learning. Forgiveness, presence, staying in your body, no self-abandonment, not falling into all-or-nothing consciousness, shortening the amount of time that you stay in self-rejection or self-attack or guilt or shame. Setbacks don't define you. It's how you deal with setbacks that will define your experience. Let me say that again. The setbacks don't define you. So stop believing that. It's how you deal with the setbacks that will define your experience. So again, setbacks are your great teacher. It's your job to be a good student of your own life and learn. Learn not to become pessimistic and fatalistic. Learn not to go into the dark place and stay there for too long. Learn to be even more committed when it comes to self-forgiveness, self-kindness. Use setbacks to give yourself extra nurturance, extra support. Learn to do the time shifting when you have a setback. You're shortening the amount of time that you're staying in upset. Notice the good reason as to why you may have had this particular setback, that particular emotional eating experience. Something triggered it. You have a good reason to have that emotional eating experience. It's okay. You did it for a reason. There is something in your life that drove you to do that. You've learned about all the possible reasons why a human being might emotionally eat. There could be nutritional influences. There could be lifestyle influences. There could be emotional influences. There could be dieting influences. Whatever it is, you did the best you could. You understood deep in yourselves, feel bad, eat food, feel better, forgive yourself for that. Smile, stay with yourself. Be a good friend to yourself. Look at every single setback as an opportunity to grow and mature in your emotional eating journey. Remember, emotional eating is a behavior, doesn't define you. You are not an emotional eater. You are a person who, here and there, emotionally eats. Downsize the importance and the power and the meaning that you give to your setback. All humans eat with emotions. All humans use food to regulate emotions. You know, language is important here. How we speak to ourselves is important. I know a lot of people will use the languaging, I sabotage myself. If you ever make this statement about yourself, I want to make a suggestion. Eliminate the word sabotage from your vocabulary, especially when it comes to describing any unwanted behavior you have, especially emotional eating. I find that this thing called self-sabotage is a toxic diagnosis. It does us absolutely no good. Here's what I mean. If you were, let's say you were diagnosed with diabetes. You can then, okay, here's my diagnosis. It's diabetes. I can now take actions based on that diagnosis. I'm empowered knowing that, oh, my weight loss resistance, my fatigue, my moodiness, that's related to a health condition that's treatable with diet or supplements or maybe drugs. So diabetes is therefore a useful, functional diagnosis. But when people self-diagnose as, I sabotage myself, you have nowhere to go with that. Nobody ever says, oh, that's my problem. I self-sabotage. And now I know exactly what to do. I feel so empowered with this diagnosis because everybody knows this sheet that when you self-sabotage, you do the following 10 things and you will no longer self-sabotage. Doesn't work like that. Self-sabotage is a dead-end diagnosis. People freeze. You freeze and go numb when you say, I sabotage myself, right? You just freeze. You go numb. You are disempowered in that moment. Sabotage is originally from the French. It means to botch things up. But gradually changed meaning over the years. It became, you know, the deliberate act of undermining a cause. And it's an intense self-diagnosis that doesn't work. Self-sabotage has us staying in distrust of self. Like, oh my God, I have to not trust me because I'm a saboteur. It has us distrust our own body. If you're distrusting self, if you're distrusting your body, that fundamentally means you distrust life. You have a distrust, a lack of faith in the wisdom of your own journey. Thinking that we self-sabotage is basically saying there's a part of me that's beating me up, which means I'm always going to lose. So you do not self-sabotage. You don't do that. What you do is you emotionally eat for a good reason that's often underneath your awareness. You're using food to regulate your emotions. And there's likely another voice in you, often the child or teenager or the rebel, who's driving our emotional eating. And they have those voices, those archetypes have a good reason. And it has nothing to do with self-sabotage. So please liberate yourself from those words, from that toxic diagnosis. You know, closely related to the term self-sabotage is the concept of the criminal mind. What many people often fail to notice is that emotional eating can often have us living and acting and functioning quite a bit from our criminal mind. Now, what does that even mean? Well, if eating when we say we don't want to eat is a bad thing, if we eat a food on my this is bad for me to eat list, or if we simply are overcome with hunger because we've been underfeeding, dieting, or stress, etc., we feel like we're committing a crime. If you're eating something you say you don't want to eat, it feels like I'm committing a crime. Now, as you may recall, the only people who commit crimes, according to how our mind works, the only people who commit crimes are criminals. And as we all know, criminals need to be punished. So we will punish ourselves for the crime of eating, for the crime of not being perfect, for the crime of requiring food to live, for the crime of having fat on my body, by self-attack, self-judgment, things like intense punishing exercise, further overeating, more food restriction, harsher rules, letting go of all our rules, whatever. So the bottom line here is that we often move through our day feeling like a criminal when it comes to food. We feel like a guilty criminal. And if we feel like a criminal, we will live in fear that we'll be found out. So if you're feeling like a guilty criminal, and if you're living in fear that you're going to be found out, what do you got to do? You got to hide. That's what criminals do. Good criminals have a good hideout. We try to hide our pain. We try to hide our confusion. We try to hide our unhappy relationship with food. We try to hide our dissatisfaction with our body. For so many people, the very simple act of eating by itself can feel like a crime. Think of how damaging that can be. So in a strange way, when we hide our struggles or hide ourselves in the moment that we're emotionally eating, we're a criminal committing a criminal act, and we're stepping into our lying mind, meaning a part of us is hiding the truth, which might have us directly lie to friends, family, or loved ones. And we might say to them, hey, I'm not hungry, when we really are. We might directly lie by saying that, yeah, I haven't eaten much today, even though we have. Or we might hide the evidence of our emotional eating, you know, food wrappers, containers, whatever. The point is, a part of us lives like a criminal, acts like a guilty criminal, and can lie like a criminal. What's worse, though, is that when we spend a lot of time in our criminal mind when it comes to food, it can leak into other parts of our life. If you lie about food, if you're lying about your struggles with emotional eating, it's easier to lie about anything else in life, to not tell the truth, to withhold information. We can do this with friends, with family, with loved ones, coworkers, anyone. We can more easily lie, I don't know, about money. We can tell little lies, big lies. Anything's possible here. The more we're in our criminal mind, the more we will isolate, the less intimacy you're going to have in your life. The more our friendships will feel a little bit too shallow. The more guilty we'll feel about ourselves, about who we are in general, and the further we'll stray away from our best self. Constantly living in that criminal mind takes us out of the light. It puts us in the darkness. We're veering off of our soul's path. So the opposite of the criminal mind is self-honesty. The opposite of the criminal mind is truth-telling. The opposite is not hiding, but creating more connection in your life, more support, more contact with friends and loved ones who are indeed supportive of what you're going through. The opposite of the criminal mind is being vulnerable and open about who you are and what you're going through. Don't punish yourself. So the moral of the story here is that you're not a criminal because you emotionally eat. You're a beautiful human being who's learning important and necessary life lessons through your relationship with food. So here's a journaling exercise that might be useful. Ask yourself, how much and how often do I live in my criminal mind? How does my relationship with food have me acting like a guilty criminal? Am I lying to myself in any way? How does lying stop me from being my best and highest self? How do I punish myself for the crime of eating, for the crime of having body fat? How do I hide from others? What lies do I tell about food, about life? Who do I lie to? And how does that impact me? How does that impact others? From here, I want to suggest that you do a truth inventory. Make a list, create an inventory of all the ways in life that you can be more honest. Who do you need to be more truthful with? What do you need to say to be more truthful? Where is life? Where is a higher power calling you to be more upfront, more honest about yourself, your life, your struggles, your relationship with food and body, your misdeeds, your mistakes, your fears, your needs, your desires, your dreams, all of it? The good, the bad. Next, write an inventory of what you've learned in this week's lesson when it comes to what success looks like with emotional eating. What stood out for you about what success means with emotional eating and how you measure it? Were there any particular insights or aha moments for you from this week's session? And for extra credit, journal about how you measure success in other areas of your life, be it work, finance, fitness, health, relationship, love, self-care, any place. Notice if you see any themes in how you measure success in various parts of life and how you measure success with food and body. Now, for your last exercise for this session is about setbacks. Based upon what you've learned this week, journal about how you will deal with any emotional eating experience or setback that you might have in the future. Write it down. Prepare yourself. Acknowledge, own. How am I going to deal with any emotional eating experience or any emotional eating setback that I might have in the future? How am I going to treat myself when I emotionally eat? What am I going to tell myself? How quickly will you get back on the horse? How quickly will you get back to your center? How quickly will you return to self-acceptance? Hint, just make it no more than an hour. How will you catch yourself if you abandon yourself? Is there a loved one or friend you can reach out to who could remind you to return to self-love and self-care? It's great to prepare yourself to acknowledge, here's what I'm going to do. Set that intention. Here's what I'm going to do with any emotional eating experience or with any setback that I have from now until forever. Here's how I'm going to be kind. Here's how I'm going to speak to myself. Here's what I'm not going to say. Here's all the old ways that I'm letting go of, the old statements that I would make to myself. Here's the positive affirmation, the positive words that I'm going to say to myself when I emotionally eat. My friends, I think we've covered some important and great material today. We've taken a deep dive into how to best measure success with emotional eating, how to effectively work with setbacks, how to understand the criminal mind when it comes to food. Please give yourself the gift of doing any and all the practices that you've been learning. As always, daily practice, that's your royal road to freedom. That's your royal road to freedom with emotional eating, to finding peace and happiness with your body. So this concludes session number 9 of the Emotional Eating Breakthrough Program, and I will see you in the next and last session. Take care and thank you. Thank you.